a couple of blessed about that. Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, the Yom Tov of Pesach, Habo Alein L'Tova, a week from Wednesday night, the way it looks right now, will certainly be very different than any Yom Tov of Pesach that we've ever observed. And we're confronted with really an unprecedented situation in terms of our preparations for Pesach. And look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do anything, and things can change in a hurry, but right now we have to prepare as if the status quo is going to be, it's going to continue. And we have to figure out how to prepare accordingly for Pesach. And I'd just like to go through tonight is some of the inyanim that come up in a year such as this, when we're not able to prepare the way we normally would because of the health concerns and because of the decisions that have been made about what's being called social distancing, etc. My wife thought that social distancing isn't the right word. The better word would be physical distancing. We can be together socially. We just can't be together physically. Okay. But anyway, I'll tell what I would like to do, or what I'm not going to do this evening. What I'd like to do, as I say, go through some of the issues that are unique to this year. I'm not really going to spend time on inyanim about kashering the kitchen. I'd be happy to talk to people privately, but there are any number of very clear presentations. The OU pamphlet that most people received, or the OU website, the Star K website, and all these places have very, very clear descriptions of how one may kasher and one should be kashering a kitchen. We'll discuss a couple of things maybe that might be more unique to this year. In addition, there are videos. Actually, I sent out last week in one of the RCBC letters, and it's available on the RCBC website, our Rabbi Daniel Center, was a connection to our shul, who is one of the heads of the Chaf K, actually made videos where he kashered or showed how to kasher different utensils, different parts of the kitchen, and so on. So people have particular issues on those fronts, it can avail themselves up of those opportunities. Again, I would be more than happy. I already have spoken to a couple of people, especially I know there are people who are making Pesach for the first time this year, or for the first time in a long while. And, those videos can be helpful. I'll be happy to talk, and I'm not really going to go into those issues too much this evening. As I say, I want to go into this evening is the issues that are particular, perhaps, so that we have to understand with regard to this year and the problem with the coronavirus, etc. In general, we have a tradition to be machmir when it comes to Hilchos Pesach, Chumra de Pesach. We find that term in the Poskim and in the Svarim, that we tend to try and be machmir about chametz. The Torah prohibits, of course, not only the consumption of chametz, but also the owning of chametz and getting benefit from chametz. And it's unique issur in that regard. We have other machalos asuras, we have other prohibited food substances. But Pesach, chametz is unique in the sense that it's only a problem for 1 week out of the year. Generally speaking, we're not used to eating ham and bacon anyway. Okay, we're not used to eating chelev and dam anyhow, and even though some of them are severe isurim, chelev and dam carry a punishment of kari, but we're b'dilimine, we separate ourselves, we're not usually consuming those products in any case. Chometz we're used to eating all year long. So we have certain chumras and certain stringencies, and again, going back to even psukim, the Ran writes in Psachim that the whole reason why we have a prohibition of owning chametz is basically so we won't come to eat chametz. There's no prohibition, technically speaking, to own a ham sandwich. It's probably not a good idea to keep one in your fridge because you may not realize what it is, you'll eat it. But there's no prohibition to own a ham sandwich. The Ran writes that we have a siog. Usually we tend to assume that a siog, a fence around something, is something that the Rabbanan instituted. That's most of the time that's the case. The Rabbanan said, don't do this, lest you'll come to do that. We find that in many places. But the Ran says there are different ways to learn besides the Ran. But the Ran is telling us, according to his approach, the whole purpose of the Isser, by Yerah, having any chametz in your possession during the course of Pesach, is to make sure that you won't come to eat it by mistake. You won't come down in the middle of the night. You want a quick midnight snack. You're hungry. And so you want to go into the fridge. And if you're going to have chametz, they may come to eat it by mistake. So we have a tradition that there are people are machmir, who take chametz more stringently. However, I think this year, because of the unique situation in which we find ourselves at this point, there are leniencies that we should take advantage of, or certainly may take advantage of, that in perhaps in a regular year we'd be more machmir about. In general, okay, part of preparing for Pesach is, of course, cleaning. This is something which I don't want to say it the wrong way, and my wife isn't, I don't know if my wife's tuned in or not upstairs, but people sometimes tend to overdo it. I'll leave it at that. In terms of the halacha, I'm not saying there's anything wrong, but cleaning for Pesach does not entail spring cleaning. Okay, you don't have to re-aluminum side your house or rip out all your pipes. That's not necessary for Pesach. If you want to do that because that's a convenient time to do it, okay. But this year, again, given the stress that many people find themselves under in general, the basic cleaning for Pesach requires, making sure there's no chametz and putting away all the chametz, either throwing it away or if you're planning to sell it, we'll get to the mechira shortly, putting it away in a closet and so on, and cleaning the house and making sure there are no actual pieces of chametz lying around. You have little children in the home, that's a bigger task. You have no children in the home anymore at this point, so you have to look in the places where it's likely that you had chametz. So, if you never keep chametz in your coat closet, you don't have to do a thorough rearranging of the entire coat closet. If you do sometimes come home from Kiddush or something like that and have some cookies in your pocket, then maybe you do have to go. You have to figure out yourself, is this a place where I'm machnis chometz? So I bring chometz into these locations. Again, if you have a drawer where you keep your underwear and your socks, you don't usually put food in there, so you don't have to do a thorough rearranging of that whole drawer. In terms of Hilchos Pesach, in terms of spring cleaning, that's a different story, but in terms of Hilchos Pesach. On the other hand, if you have little children around, you'd be surprised, or you're not surprised, to find chametz in all kinds of unusual places, toys and so on. The truth is, most of the toys, if they're sticky, a lot of kids that play with toys, they're sticky. Probably what's making them sticky is not chametz anyway. It's probably kitnius. It's probably not even chametz. But sometimes, you have children who took a cookie from somewhere or they hid some of the shalach manas to make sure that they would get the goodies that they wanted, and they put it inside some drawer, inside, some back of some toy truck or whatever it is. So with children, you do have to be more thorough, and because there really may be actual pieces of chametz around. Crumbs, strictly speaking, is not a problem. Crumbs, chametz is a piece of bread. You have crumbs somewhere you can't see. All right, so we'll vacuum anyway. But my point is that we don't have to overdo, especially if people are feeling stressed. Not many people. On the other hand, people may be home and they have more time and you want to clean, that's okay. But, we don't need to, from the point of view of Pesach, necessarily do the kind of cleaning that everybody does when we're in a normal state of mind. As I said before, in terms of kashering, so you take advantage of the books that the OU produce, the pamphlets, and they have a item by item, kitchen item by kitchen item, list of how to kasher it, what has to be done, and so on. So as I said, I'm not going to go into that. One of the mitzvahs that we have that's not directly related to our observance of Pesach, but it's directly related to the observance of Klal Yisrael Pesach, and that is the mitzvah of Mo'os Chitim. People are generally very generous around the time of Pesach, that we try and support people who are in need. We have people in our community who are in need, and perhaps there are more people who are in need now, having been perhaps laid off or even lost jobs or under financial stress. So Mo'os Chitim remains something that is important. It's an old tradition, really going way back to help people need. As a matter of fact, our Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, once said that the Vilna Gaon actually said that there's a remez in the Torah itself, because the Torah says, Matzos ye ochel, not only tells us to eat matzah, matzos ye ochel, matzos shall be eaten, meaning we have to make sure that matzos are eaten. We all have a chiv to make sure that matzos are eaten by other people. We have to make sure that their needs are taken care of also. So it goes way back. And our Soloveitchik said that actually that's why at the Seder we begin in Halach Ma'anya, we say, Kol dichvin yesei v'yechol. We invite people to come in. So sadly, this year we can't really invite people to come in, but we say it anyway, the Rav said, because that's a demonstration of cheres. That's a difference. One of the differences between Eved and Ben Chorin is that Eved cannot give out invitations. An Eved can't invite a friend of his for dinner Tuesday night. An Eved is at the behest of his master. He doesn't own anything. So an Eved can't issue invitations to come, it's not his. The property is not his. What he owns is not his. The food's not his. Ben Chorin does. So to demonstrate our cheres, we show that we're Ben Chorin. We invite people. And so the Rav connected that to Mo'os Chitim. One of the ways we demonstrate cheres is we have invite other people. We help other people. We can't invite people, because we can still help people. And again, if people would like to use my services in terms of the Shul Discretionary Fund, people are encouraged to participate. I'll just try and go through things in more or less a chronological order for now and the Leil Pesach, the first day of Pesach. The form I sent out, I hope everyone received it. If you didn't, please let me know. I sent out an online form for the purpose of arranging for the sale of your chametz. Again, the Torah prohibits us from owning chametz during the course of Pesach, and therefore, if one has chametz left, one has to dispose of it. That's the isur lav, the isurim of bayirah by motzei. But there's also a mitzvah zasei of tashbisu. We'll get back to that later, to destroy whatever chametz is left. However, a couple of centuries ago, when it became more and more common, originally in the work, in the workforce and bakeries and so on, but eventually in homes also, that people had a lot of chametz at one time, before refrigeration and storage. So what did a person have when he came to Pesach? Not too much left. There's no refrigeration. He didn't have, boxes of ziti, from Costco in the basement and so on and so forth. That just didn't exist. So you got rid of whatever chametz was left. However, that became and can be, even today, a financial hardship for people. They have a lot of chametz that they've accumulated during the course of the year, and then they bought stuff and they have stuff and don't want to get rid of it. So the mechanism of mechiras chametz was introduced. Mechiras chametz has really there are two parts. Okay, there are two different aspects. One is the appointment, the way we do it today. I'm talking about one is the appointment of the Rav or somebody else, usually the Rabbi, to act as your agent. When you come to me, you are not selling me your chametz. Okay, I'm not allowed to own chametz on Pesach either, so I'm not interested in buying your chametz. I think I've mentioned at least to some people in the past, years ago, we had a housekeeper in the house. And so we had explained to her how to help in the closet and what to take out and this and that. And she was with us a couple of years and she understood. But then, people started to come on Erev Pesach, a couple of days before Pesach, a lot of people coming to my house to sell the chametz. And she asked my wife, what are all these people coming for? So my wife said, they're coming to sell their chametz to the rabbi. And she said, what? You told me to get rid of everything. Now all these people are going to bring their chametz to this house. She thought she's going to have infinitely more work to do. She's going to have to separate all this chametz too. So go try and explain, they're not really bringing it. Anyway, the way it works is you or whoever it is what you're doing is you're appointing me as an agent to sell your chametz to a non-Jew. Now that, and basically the forms that I generally use that you're familiar with from past years, you've seen perhaps with other rabbanim and so on, use similar forms. There's a harshah, it's what it's called. You're authorizing me to act as your agent. I'm not buying your chametz. You're authorizing me to, similar to what we call in English today, power of attorney. You give me power of attorney over your chametz. And what then happens, that's step one. And that's as far as the most people is concerned, that's the end of your role. What happens then is sometime on Erev Pesach, before whatever the Zman is, there are two Zmanim of Erev Pesach. There's the last time you can eat chametz and the last time you can own chametz, about an hour apart. Okay, so sometime before the last moment you're allowed to own chametz, I go to a non-Jew. I go together with other rabbanim. People remember the name Mr. John Brown in Riverdale. And I sell him. I show him all those papers and I sign them and so on and so forth. And there's a transaction, actually a series of transactions that takes place to formalize this to this deal. And he now owns all that chametz. So even though the point is that even though you have chametz in your closet on Pesach, okay, if you, you put away all the whatever leftover donuts or cereal boxes or pasta or whatever else you have that's chametz, you put it in a certain closet or cabinet or maybe in your attic or in your basement, wherever you put it, it's still in your house, but it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the non-Jew to whom the chametz was sold. So the way we normally do it today to make it a strong type of kinyan is that when you come to the rabbi, you use what's called the kinyan chalipin, a kinyan suder. The rabbi gives something, a pen, a hat, or whatever it is, and that kind of formalizes your appointing me as your agent. Strictly speaking, the Rambam says today that a kinyan is not really necessary, that it's enough as long as the person who is appointing the rabbi as the agent makes it very clear that this is what he wants, and it's understood that he knows what he's talking about, the rabbi knows what he's talking about. So you don't really need, strictly speaking, that kinyan. Okay, I prefer, obviously, in a regular year, that's what we do it. We strengthen the deal by having a formal transaction, by giving something of value, which is, of minimal value, but of value, which signifies this kinyan. But that's really lechizek hadover. That's just to strengthen it, so to speak, to make it more serious. But strictly speaking, it's okay without it. I've gotten many, many times, okay, quite a number of times. Well, first of all, almost every year I get people who don't live in the area who, for whatever reason, want me to act as their agent. They don't live around here, so I'm not able to do a kinyan with them. So I do it over the phone with them. And what they do is I ask them, you sure you understand what you're doing and so on? And they have what's called gemiras das. That's the term in halach and binimamonis. They have what's called gemiras das. So they agree that they're giving me this authority to act as their agent. And there was no kinyan, and it's okay. And there are many gedolei Torah that didn't bother with the kinyan. It just did a harshah. People sign, that was it, and it works. We do it, as I say, in an ordinary year. We do it with the strength in the deal. We do it with with something more, with some form of a kinyan, but it's not absolutely necessary. Therefore, this year, when we because of the health concerns and so on, we cannot meet in person. Litzareinu. So it's okay to do it via the form that I sent to you. Again, even orally, I've gotten phone calls when I'm on Erev Pesach in the morning on the way to Mr. Brown. Rabbi, I forgot to come over. Well, you can't come over now. I'm in the car. I'm on the George Washington Bridge. So again, we'll do it over the phone in those circumstances. So this year, when coming in person is not really an option, so that's the form that I sent out. And by the way, and I'm not a lawyer, and the lawyers here can, but from my understanding, is that that's a legal means of transaction in American law. Also, if something is authorized online and so on. So the form that I sent you is the form we're going to use this year, that when you submit it to me, so that's your authorization of me to act as the agent to sell the chametz. In the absence of this kinyan, it's 100% valid. In terms of the actual selling of the chametz to the non-Jew, so that's already a little trickier, because that requires, that can't be done simply through some kind of electronic, or may not be able to be done. There are a number of sfeikas, a number of doubts. Again, we're dealing with a non-Jew, so the business transaction with a non-Jew may not follow all the exact same rules as business with a Jew. And there are all kinds of rules which are beyond, the scope of what I'm going to right now. And therefore, certain things really done in person. There, you do want a chalipin, you do want what's called kinesitumta, like a handshake, and or some type of other formal transaction. And other things I'm leaving out, there's actually six different transactions that we do with the non-Jew, all to the exclusion of each other, because it's, in case one is not good, we're covered no matter what. That's a lot trickier and can't really be done unless it's in person. Again, given the situation this year, so Rabbi Willig agreed, in fact, and that's why his name is on the form that I sent to you via email earlier today. If anyone didn't get it, please reach out and I'll be happy to send it to you. I'll send a link to you. Rabbi Willig will actually, again, in a manner that's legal and in accordance with health regulations and so on, we'll meet with the non-Jew he's using, hopefully Mr. Brown, and effect the transaction on behalf of everybody that does with him, including us, because that's already a little trickier, because that's something you have to worry about. You'll simply fill out the form, and the Mechiras Chametz works even in the absence of the formal transaction that we normally engage in when you come over. I don't know if it's particularly relevant. Often, if somebody's going away for Pesach, I don't think that too many people are going away now at this point, probably shouldn't be, someone going away and is not going to do Bedikas Chometz, there may still be people going away. Okay, if you want to do, you're not going to do Bedikas Chometz on the night of Pesach, you're going away before, so then we do what's called Mechiras Yud Gimel. Okay, we do the Mechira the night before. We don't do it the morning of Erev Pesach, do it the night before, meaning actually the evening before nightfall, before the obligation of Bedikas Chometz sets in. That will exempt the person having to do that. Again, this is in the form. I don't think it's relevant to most people this year, but we will be able to do that with this form as well. Okay, so that's in terms of Mechirat Chometz. Now, just a side point. I've already gotten this question several times, both by email and phone calls. Mechiras Chometz is what we might call a legal fiction, okay? But it works. It's legal. In fact, the form that we, I think I mentioned this also, the form that we use in the whole transaction of our willing, so a couple of years ago, one of the people that came had been a Rav in the Washington, D.C., one of the Washington, D.C. shuls. And so he used as his non-Jew one of the justices of the United States Supreme Court, Justice Souter, and he looked at a document and said, this is a legal document. So this is not just phony. It's a legal document. We joked with him that he must have made a Kenyan Souter because he used Justice Souter as the as his non-Jew. But in any event, it's a legal document. But nonetheless, it is what we call in halachic terminology a haroma. Haroma is like a trick. It's a little bit funny. We know that at the end of the day, unlike what my housekeeper thought, at the end of the day, Mr. Brown or else is not coming to any of our houses and taking comments. He could. He absolutely could. And I know that some Rabbanim, Rabbi Tendler Shlita, used to follow that practice. I'm told by people who grew up in Muncie that he would bring the non-Jew to one random person's house during Pesach and take a box of cereal just to show that it's valid. But generally speaking, we know that most of our chametz is not going to disappear. It's not going to be taken by the goy. Although, as was circulating around, you know, with the the memes or whatever, you know, someone said, given the state of our supermarkets, I'm not sure that the goyim will want to sell us back our chametz this year. So I don't know. Could be that this year they will want to take it. But in all seriousness, the fact is that most of the time we know that it's, you know, the chametz is never leaving our home. It stays in a closet. We keep it away. We don't touch on paste. Not ours. But we know that it's called the haroma, but that's okay. Because at the end of the day, the prohibition of owning the chametz, that's a lo saseh. Okay, the Bal Yerah and Bal Yemotzeh. And so at the end of the day, I didn't violate it, right? By hook or by crook, but I didn't violate it. So good, it's a haroma, but at the end of the day, it worked. I didn't violate it. However, there are some who are hesitant to employ this for other reasons when you're dealing with something which is mamash, what's called chametz gomor. Chametz gomor is actual chametz, like a loaf of bread, like a box of cereal, where anything with more than 50% of the ingredients is actual chametz, as opposed to, you know, a tarovis chametz, which is also not allowed on Pesach, but we're stricter with a chametz gomor, especially because there may be a... you know, there's also an assay of Tashpisu and so on, so you're getting out of an assay. Again, I don't want to go into all the details now, but there are people who are careful. They don't sell any chametz gomer. They'll sell other mixtures of chametz and mustard and ketchup and other things like that are mixtures of chametz in them, but not actual chametz gomer. And it is a reasonable chumra for those who follow it. It's a fine chumra. The truth of the matter is I don't sell my own. I don't have much left. You know, we're able to time it. We don't have too much left. And there are people who follow that. It's a perfectly acceptable chumrah. Again, Rav Soloveitchik felt that that is a very good chumrah to try and follow. And people asked him, so Rebbe, what about liquor? Because liquor is, you know, made a grain derivative. And supposedly, and I didn't hear this myself, but I heard it from Talmidim older than I, he said, if you want to hold on to your liquor, don't ask me that question. Okay, because it sounds like he was saying even liquor. Anyway, the point is that was a chumra that Rav Soloveitchik and other briskers and others followed, not to sell chametz gomor. Rav Moshe Feinstein did not hold that way. He said that, no, the whole sale. Matter of fact, I mentioned to somebody, I recall reading in Rabbi Shimon Eider, one of his Sefer on Pesach, he quotes in a footnote in Yiddish, when he talks about this subject, quote, but he asked Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe answered, I'm a kaif nisht chametz gomor, vat kaif me yo. What's Kaufman Yo? If you're not selling chametz, what are you selling? You're selling in some minor ingredient somewhere. Anyway, so there's no doubt that the sale works for chametz gomer as well. Some people have a chumrah. So the question was, this year, when there's some concern, you know, people may have gone shopping and bought lots of stuff because we're concerned about maybe the stachami stuff after Pesach or whatever it is, and a person this year would like to sell the chametz gomer, even though the minig, generally speaking, in past years was not to sell chametz gomer. So it's okay. You're allowed to do that, and the sale definitely works. And you don't need hataras nedarim for this, even though that's a minig tov, perhaps, that you've observed for many years. You do not have to do hataras nedarim. The Dogel Mervova, that's by the Notabi Huda, the Slacher B'cheska Levi of Prague, Dogel Mervova and Hilchos Nedarim writes, when a person is changing his practice, not for all time, for good, he's stopping this minig, just because of a one-time situation. The one-time situation, I mentioned someone on the phone today. I was once, B'didi of Uvda once, had nothing to do with Pesach. I was once a guest at a weekend bar mitzvah, and it was during June. So I personally, as people should know, I don't like the daven ma'ariv until after Tzeisach Kochavim. So we wait till after Tzeisach Kochavim. That's why I do it during the week as well. Not such. I don't daven my own personal chumra, whatever. I don't daven ma'ariv until after nightfall. So the Baal Simcha asked me. It was June. The Baal Simcha asked me to daven for the Amud, the daven Kabbal Shabbos and ma'ariv. And then I make a 7 o'clock minyan, and we're going to wait till 8:15 or whatever the first thought was. It was a bar mitzvah, so I didn't want to say no. Anyway, Rabbi Shechter happened to be a guest at that same simcha, so I asked him. So he said, "You have to." The Baal Simcha invited you and your wife to come for a weekend for Shabbos bar mitzvah. He asked you to daven for the yom. You should daven for the yom. It's not right. So I said, "Okay, I'm okay with that." But what about Hataras Hadarim? So, you know, he quoted this Dogel Mervova and said that when a person is not abandoning that minig for all time just because of a one-time situation, you're not going to do it right now. That does not require Hataras Hadarim, and therefore those people who in the past perhaps may not have sold chametz Dogel Gomor, but this year would like to do it, would not require any Hataras Hadarim. this year, and then people can make that decision for themselves. Just want to clarify also, we assume that the people always ask about pots and pans. We don't sell the pots and pans. We're talking about the way we paskin today. We don't sell the pots and pans because pots and pans, while we can't use them on Pesach if they were used for chametz, whatever bleeds, whatever absorbed flavor in there, there's nothing you can't, they don't sell that. No one wants to buy that. No one's buying absorbed flavors. And furthermore, it would present a problem because if you would sell the pots and pans and then we bought it back, well, I mean, they're owned by a non-Jew for a week, you'd have to title all the caleb. That's its own problem, which we'll get to in a moment. But in any event, so that's just in terms of chametz gomer. If somebody wants to avail themselves of that, and it's not, honestly, it's a kula. It's perfectly acceptable. That's what the sale is for. Matter of fact, the original chametz sales were for bakeries and liquor purveyors. You know, for actual chametz bakeries. You know, it was to tell people to throw out all that stuff. It was a tremendous financial loss. So there's no question that the sale is valid. There's a chumrah, and if you want to not do the chumrah this year, it's okay. I will not entail it will not require a Torah Sedarim. And again, if someone doesn't need to do it, okay. You want to do bittul, you know, bittul works with the rice and so on. Okay. As far as purchasing, again, people, especially who haven't made Pesach in a while, even people who had, purchasing new kalim. So there's a concern in some communities. Baruch Hashem, this is not, at the moment, a concern in our community. When you purchase new kalim from a non-Jew, okay, and most assume, even though there's some coolers if it's a corporation, but if a person purchases new kalim, metal kalim, a glass kalim, pots, pans, silverware, and so on, from a non-Jew, so you have to immerse them in a mikveh. We have the kalim mikveh over here. In many communities, because of the health concern now, the kalim mikvehs were closed. Our kalim mikveh is presently open because we chlorinate the water. That's number one. It was shown that medically that chlorine destroys this virus. So the kalim mikveh is now being chlorinated. And also, you can go to the kalim mikveh in Tinek by appointment only, and it's cleaned out. It's disinfected with disinfectant between visitors and so on. So right now, our kalim mikveh is open. In other places, the kalim mikveh was not open, or if there should become a point where, hopefully not, but we're mamish quarantine, we don't go out of the house, and we won't be able to go to the kalim mikveh either. So there are a number of different etzes. Again, there's a kula for this year. It's not something we'd ordinarily rely on. Again, our mikveh is chlorinated. In our mikveh, we have staggered appointments and so on. So right now, it's still okay. But there are a couple of options. If a person, for example, will gift or sell sell the kalim to a non-Jew. Okay, that's a little complicated, but the Beis Din of America, those who are interested, they can check online. There are forms how you can go ahead and do that. The other possibility is to be mafkir. Okay, you mafkir. You tell three people. It doesn't have to be in person. It could be on the phone or it could be online. Tell three people I'm mafkir. I'm relinquishing ownership of these pots and pans. You put them outside for a little while on your porch as if to say anyone can take them, and then you can bring them back. I would advise strongly that if you're buying something new for this year, buy taka, you know, the cheapest. Don't get, I don't know what's the best type of farberware is about. I don't know what it used to be. I don't know whatever is considered the top of the line. Don't buy the top of line pots and pans this year. Buy just something that you'd use over Pesach and you know, get cheaper. Of course, if you can use disposable stuff, that's even better. Okay, we assume a bunch of fine-seam paskins that are, and we fast paskin like that among Ashkenazi Jews, you know, our ilk. We follow the Heter of Moshe and others that disposable aluminum pans and so on don't need, and tinfoil do not need. But the chassidim, they're machmir about it. That's why some stores have kalim mikveh in the back. But again, today, it's not a chumah to look for. And we have responsible poskim who say that there is no problem using aluminum. So I would tell people to the extent possible, if you don't have Pesach thicker stuff from past years because you haven't made Pesach or just don't have enough, use it to the extent possible. Use disposable pans and so on, one-time use type of stuff, and then you won't have a problem at all. But if you have new kalim, you have to tell. Again, our mikveh is still open, so hopefully it won't be a problem. But you know, you can either sell it to a guy with this form of the base in America, or it can be mafker it in the way that I just described it. You know, someone suggested, well, you can include in your sale the chametz dikapatz. You want to sell them to him. Okay, we don't have that on the form. If you need to do that, maybe then we can make that arrangement as well. There's another kula. It's interesting. Some have pointed out, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others point this out. If you look carefully in the Torah, the mitzvah toivel kalim is a mitzvah saseh. There's no iser in terms of the Torah to use a kli that was not toiveled. Right, the mitzvah is to be tovel, to immerse the kli. There's no prohibition. So we assume that because it's a mitzvah, it's not right to use it. And that's why I thought that I thought of this also. The big Rabbanim haven't said it, but I thought also. So when we can't, okay, so you use it without Tevilin, and right when the crisis is over, you'll run and Tevilin it. In other words, you know, there's a mitzvah say to Tevil, and we can't perform. We're stuck. It's onus. We're not able. Again, in our community right now, Baruch Hashem, not a problem. But if it should become a problem, so a person not able to fulfill the mitzvah of what do you call it of Tevilas Kevet, you can't do it. You can't do it. There's no issue to use it. But that, everyone has the poskim of Shechter and others have said to either avail yourself of this gifting it, selling it to a non-Jew, or to be mafkir it. So that's what those are. You know those are the yetzes that they're suggesting. Another, I guess, again, following, I guess, the order. In terms of purchasing food, I guess, for Pesach. So again, first of all, those people who are concerned and so on, many of the local establishments have set up, again, with Rabbonim, met with them and so on. It's called Pesach in a box. The people who don't have the ability or the time or the gedul to be able to, you know, to prepare everything can purchase a lot of ready-made things. So that's something you may want to take advantage of or get, you know, that's something you can do. When we come to Erev Pesach, we have a tradition that the firstborn fast, called Tainis Bechor. Okay, Tainis Bechor. Now, Tainis Bechor is, you know, it's an old takana, but it's not one of the Taniyos, of course, that we find in the Tanakh, or not one of the Taniyos, or something in the Torah, we have Yom Kippur only. It's not on the category of Shavuos Matamas or Tisha B'Av or Tzom Gedalia or Asar B'Teves, and not even Asar, even Tainis Esther. It's a later practice, but we fast. And in recent years, you know, quite a number of years, you know, a couple of, you know, probably a couple of centuries, right, became more the practice that people get out of this fast by attending a siyum. Why? Unclear exactly when that started, exactly how, but the assumption is that Erev Pesach, people are very busy. They're running around. I don't know, maybe people are less busy this year, I don't know, but they're running around, so it's going to be very difficult. Maybe we're weaker or just it's difficult to anticipate. You know, you spend the whole day fasting and then you come to the Seder and then you got to sit around and you know, till you get to eat, the karpas doesn't do much, you know, and the first thing you drink is wine, and maybe that's not the best thing in your stomach and so on. So therefore, people look for patent, you know, the way out of this fast, and the common practice today is that people attend the siyum. So usually in most of the shuls, every half hour, after every minyan, have another siyum. Somebody finishes the mesichta, and he invites his 150 closest friends who happen to be at that minyan to join him for donuts or whatever it is in the you know, in the vestibule of the shul. The question is, again, we're not able, unfortunately, to be in shul on Erev Pesach, so what happens to the Tainis Bechor? So I thought it's a little strange. So people have said, well, you can do it via Zoom, right? Someone will say, see him, you'll finish a mesichta via Zoom. Okay, you can't say Kaddish on Zoom because Kaddish requires people to be in the same room, okay? As a matter of fact, they're just saying as a side point, any Dover Shabbatusha requires that 10 people have to be in the same room. A room is probably defined by, you know, you need a mezuzah there. And I'm just saying as a side point, that's why sometimes it comes up in a Beis Ovel, Rachman al Itzlan, you have some, there are 10 people, there are 5 people in the dining room, 5 people in the living room, which are attached. You know, that's questionable because they're not all 10 in the same room. You should have 10 people in the same room. The other people are certainly mitzvah. They're certainly part of the minyan. They certainly can answer and so on. But to constitute the minyan, you need 10 people in the same room. So when we have Zoom or whatever it is, so we're all in different homes and different rooms. So you can't say Dover Shemekdusha. You can't say Kaddish. So this Messiah won't say Kaddish. He'll say all the rest of the Hadra and everything else, but he won't say Kaddish. But then what? Usually he's the sponsor, or he authorized the shul to be his sponsor to invite everybody to eat. So now I'm making a big siyum. And I tell everybody, okay, I finished my siyum. Now go out to eat. You know, have a good time at dinner. Go out to eat. What kind of siyum? What kind of simcha is that? I'm supposed to invite you to my siyum, my sudas mitzvah, not tell you now you go out to eat. Okay, you know, on your cheshbon. So it's a little bit sounds a little bit funny to be able to do it over you know, over Zoom. And I thought, you know, listen, there are a couple of very short mesichtas. Okay, Masechtas Talmud, I was discussing with somebody today, someone asked me, Masechtas Talmud is only 7 blot, and Horios is 14 blot, so there's still a little time someone would like to finish Masechtas privately, maybe that would be a good thing to do, or learn some Mishnayos, or I think Rav Moshe Feinstein said three Masechta of Mishnayos or something, if one can. But again, I understand it's not practical for everybody. So Rav Shechter said, he quoted a tshuva of Henkin. Zichrono Baruch, Rav Henkin was the, I don't know if you call him chief rabbi of New York, unofficially, I guess, the chief rabbi of New York City in the, you know, mid-20th century, before Rav Moshe Feinstein came, and they were Moshe lived on the Lower East Side, Henkin was older. So Rav Henkin, in one of his svarim, has a discussion where he says that he feels, listen, this whole fast anyway started sort of, it's not in the Tanakh, it's not in the Gemara. This whole fast started as a minig, so to speak. And today the minig has changed. Nobody in there, never heard of anybody fast. Nobody fasts. People go to a siyum. In fact, I remember one year, it's happened more than once, that there's been a bris on Erev Pesach. So if the Chorev, there's a bris on Erev Pesach, you don't have to go to a siyum, right? The bris is the Sudas Mitzvah under ordinary circumstances. I remember once years ago, I attended a bris, and Rabbi Katzenstein, Zichrono Livracha, the old Rabbi Katzenstein, the old Moel Rabbi Katzenstein, Zichrono Livracha, he was the Moel. And then I saw him going, it was at Beth Aaron, and he was going upstairs to see him. I said, well, you know, what's going on? Yeah, but the minig is to hear, he said, the minig is to hear a see him. I did the same thing. I don't want to say anything, but the minig is to hear a see him. So I have a shikul Torah once, another time, we'll have opportunity to talk why the see him took over. But in any event, Rav Henkin writes that the, kind of the fast changed, and therefore there's a minig. And he said, if a person can't attend the see him, or if a person can't fast, actually, he said, so give stock instead. Right, we find in the Gemara already the person that's stuck at some time. So he felt that the minig changed, and based on that, basically he said we can do any type of trickery, so to speak, tatsdiki, this language, call tatsdiki and come up to a chap, some kind of a kunz, to get out of fasting. That's the minig today. So we go to a siyum, or you give stuck it, or you can do it on Zoom, even though it's a little funny, you're not really participating in the Suda, so go have your own donut, or go wash, even better. And shul usually can't wash, a little impractical, or Pesach to have too much bread around the house, and your wife may not want you to do that either in your house, so you can be careful about it. But in any event, that's what the poskim said, so the Tanis Bechor, one can do it, or either you can finish your own Masechta, which is a nice thing, if you have the time, you can pull it off. If not, then through something like Zoom. In terms of beer chametz, so the truth of the matter is, we paskin meikar adin that one can dispose of the last bit of your chametz through any means. You can crumble it up and throw it into the wind. You can flush it down the toilet. You can dispose of it any way. Most of the chametz that we said is put away, but we sell it to a goy, or you put it out in the garbage as collected before Pesach. But people have the chometz, for example, the 10 little pieces that you found from the Dikas chometz the night before, or whatever little chometz you have left. So our minig is to burn it, because there's one sheet in the Gemara is that you require sreifa. There is a sheet like that. If you hold, you have ain't be able to sreifa. You have to burn it. So mikra din, we don't require it. Mikra din, we can get it. In fact, looking ahead to next year, Bez Hashem, we won't have these problems next year. But next year, Erev Pesach's on Shabbos. It's one of those years. Okay. And so Tavshin Payal of Erev Pesach on Shabbos. So we're going to have chametz. Perhaps some people are going to have chametz on Shabbos. You're not going to burn it on Shabbos. You're going to set a fire on Shabbos. So you get rid of it some other way. So one can go ahead to get rid of it a different way here also. We looked into it in Teaneck in the past by the Teaneck Jewish Center. There's been a big communal kind of burning, and it was a suggestion maybe they could set up a fire and people can come in groups and the stagger. But it seems that it's rather cumbersome and it's going to be a problem, so it probably will not be happening. What a person could, again, to be careful, fire is dangerous. I would say if you have a grill in your backyard, if you like, and you're not too nervous in terms of the fire, so turn on the grill and throw. Again, no bagels, okay? Bagels, I always tell people, don't save a bagel for beer chametz. It takes hours to burn through a bagel. Okay, you need to have a fire like who knows where, like a volcano fire to burn through bagels. In general, forget about this year. Bagels should not be what you burn because it's not going to be burnt by the time of the Zman. Okay, maybe you put it at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 hours later, but it'll be burnt. But bagels take a long time. You take a little piece of bread, okay, and then you can burn it, a little tiny piece of bread. All you got to do, one kezias. You don't even have to do the whole 10 pieces. Okay, you can get one kezias, a small, tiny bit of bread. You can burn it in your grill, or if you have a safe place to put on fire, you can do it. But again, be cognizant, of our neighbors and people looking and things that are funny. If it's not practical in any way or it's dangerous in any way, so forget about it. Just, throw it. crush it up, you know, into crumbs, that last bit of kazayas, crush it up in crumbs, put it in the toilet and flush it down the toilet. And, you know, you don't want to put big pieces in because you want to stop up the toilet. Again, it's a practical concern. But the little crumbs, I think that's that'll be fine. Can we paskin, you know, again, hashposa b'chol dover. As far as other kulas, so we know a lot of people have been talking about, oh, can we get rid of kidneys? This is just the excuse to get rid of kidneys in general. But we have a tradition among Ashkenazim that we don't eat on Pesach rice and legumes and peanuts and beans and so on and so forth and other things that are in the category of kidneys. We maintain that tradition. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, we maintain that tradition. There is no iser to own kidneys on Pesach, so therefore there's no requirement to sell. So when you sell your chometz to the rabbi, or again, authorize the rabbi to act as your agent to sell it, do not, and on that form, do not include any kidneys products, because there is no prohibition of bayor, by matzah, on kidneys. You can own as much kidneys as you like during the course of Pesach. It's not a problem. So there's no reason to dispose of kidneys. You can put them away. Again, put them away so you won't end up using them by mistake. But there's no issue to own kidneys on Pesach. Therefore, there's no requirement to sell. And there's no bayor, by matzah on kidneys. But nonetheless, a person should maintain the Ashkenazi should maintain the minig not to eat kidneys. However, if somebody has a medical condition or some other circumstance, somebody is in a situation where you know, where he has to take some sort of medicine, or sometimes you have a baby that the formulas with soy formula and so on. So again, we're lenient with kidneys. Perhaps this year we can be more lenient with certain medications because it won't be easier for us to get replacement medicine and so on and so forth. So when it's kidneys, again, I think that we must properly continue to observe the practice of kidneys, unless a person's situation is stuck someplace with nothing else to eat. Okay, a person has nothing else to eat, and okay. But most of us are not in that situation, so we should maintain kidneys as a proper practice. But medications or things that somebody needs, or again, this person is on a special kind of a diet, so then it's I think you know, it's okay. This year, Erev Pesach is a Wednesday, so we have to do Erev Tavshilin. Now, it's interesting because sometimes people forget to do Erev Tavshilin. People, especially Erev Pesach, are mixed up and they're running around and they forget about Erev Tavshilin. Erev Tavshilin is the mechanism by which we're allowed to cook. The heter to cook on Yontif is limited to Yontif. You know, when one is allowed to cook on Yontif, yes, for Yontif. Okay, for Yontif, you're allowed to cook. But let's say this the next week, if Friday is Yontif, you're not allowed to cook for Shabbos on Yontif. Right, you're not allowed to cook for Yontif for that day itself. For Yontif, you're not even supposed to cook on the first day Yontif, the second day Yontif. You're not supposed to cook on Yontif for Shabbos. But yet, you know, sometimes people need to make preparations for Shabbos. So what are you supposed to do? So that's Erev Tavshilin, where in effect you begin your preparation on Wednesday when it's still a weekday. Erev Yontif, you set aside a baked item and a cooked item. And we all know you make the bracha and you make a little declaration. The declaration is printed in Aramaic. It's not a tefillah. You can say it in English. I say it in Aramaic too, but then I say it in English. The thing is that sometimes, people have to understand it, but sometimes, same thing with the Kol Chamira, by the way, I should say that. Kol Chamira, Chamira, we say after Bedikas Chometz on the night before Pesach, on Tuesday night, after getting rid of your last bit of Chometz, beer Chometz on Wednesday morning, you say the text of Kol Chamira Chamira. There's no kedusha to that text. It's not from the Tanakh. It's just a declaration. So you want to say it in Aramaic, that's our tradition, but then say it in English. People have to understand what it means. You have to understand what it means. So anyway, what happens if a person forgets? Sometimes people forget, or they don't know how to do it properly. They make a mistake. So usually the rabbi has in mind that he's going to count. It's printed in the text. It says, Lonu l'chol adorim berezos. It includes everybody in this city, everybody in this town. Now, how do you include everybody? You can't just say the magic word. So what the rabbi usually does, what I usually do, is I go to one of the neighbors in my area, and I ask one of them to come over, and I give them, and they're mizak on behalf of the tzibur. They take the Erev Tavshilin, so to speak, and that's acting on behalf of the entire tzibur. This year, it's questionable one can do that, again, for medical reasons and distancing and so on. So, I don't know. I actually spoke to Rabbi Shechter about it. He feels that we should still do it. Maybe it doesn't. I guess all the rabbis in town do it. Maybe the rabbis should get together. Only one rabbi should do it. But actually, I have a friend who lives not far from me who already had the virus. Baruch Hashem had a relatively mild case. He's okay. So maybe by a week and a half from now, I'll use him as the person. But we should remember to make Erev Tavshilin. On Pesach night, many people have the practice, and our shul, it is the practice, to recite Hallel after Ma'ariv. With a bracha, full Hallel, with a bracha before and after. That's the minig in many places. It's the Those of a Yekesha background, and some of the many Litvaks don't follow that practice. They do not say hello on Pesach night, but those who are of a Sephardi background do, the Chassidim do, and the Vilna Gaon and his Talmidim do. It's a lot of people. Eretz Yisrael, that's the minhag. So the question is, what about when you're davening at home, as we look like we'll unfortunately be doing this year? So there are three different possibilities. Either don't say hello at all at home, or say halal without a bracha. That's what Rav Shechter thought, that Rav Soloveitchik had it understand. It's really also based on something in the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon links the practice of saying halal and shul to Pirsume Nisa, to publicizing the miracle. Similar, he makes a link to Hadlokas Ner Chanukah in shul. We light Chanukah candles in shul by Ma'ariv, even though nobody lives there, nobody's Yotzeh with those candles in shul. And that's an old, again, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch never make that, never make a statement about that, but our minig is that we light those of when we daven Friday night in shul right before Shabbos and Motzei Shabbos in our shul, when and other shuls have weekday minyanim, they make they light Hanukkah candles by Ma'ariv, even though it's Neri Shubeso. Those who learn Daf Yomi, I think you're up to that Daf now. No, so Neri Shubeso, it's a mitzvah on a household. So who's living in the shul? So nobody. It's just Pesumei Nisa. So the Vilna Gaon links these two practices. So Rav Shechter thought that. Well, how are you going to say if you're not davening your house? It was a mitzvah for the tzibur and so on, and therefore he thought that you should not make a bracha. If you want to say the psukim, halal, go right ahead, psukim tilim. However, Rabbi Yosef has a tshuva in the fifth chelak of Chavadas, where he is very, very into saying halal with a bracha on Pesach night. He says even women should do it before they say it. Women should also say halal with a bracha on Pesach night. I don't know if that's practiced too much around here, but he feels he can say it with a bracha, and it doesn't matter whether you're in shul or you're not in shul. But in any event, that is that's in terms of halal. So honestly, I haven't decided what I'm going to do with a bracha yet or not. You know, my heart pulls me to say a bracha. Rav Shechter said from Rav Soloveitchik not to say a bracha. So I don't know. If those want to know what I'll do, you can ask me next week. I'm still thinking about it. But in any event, those are different practices there. A couple of other things, and then we'll move to wrap up. On first day of Pesach, we begin to say Tfilas Tal. Usually Tfilas Tal, we stop saying Mashar Horna Geshem, and we say either nothing or Morid HaTal. That begins with Tfilas Tal, associated with Musaf. And the question is, what are we doing this year? There's no Tfilas Tal. Again, you want to say the Piyutim, nothing wrong with saying them to yourself, but there's no public, no public Tfilas Tal. So when should we start saying Morid HaTal or stop saying Masharuch Morid HaGeshem? So usually that Hachroza, that announcement, the rabbi gives a clap, or we see the rabbi, or whoever's davening v'yamin, wears a kittel and starts using the nusach of Tfilas Tal and so on. That counts as the Hachroza. As an announcement, we should start saying Morid HaTal. Those who don't say it know to stop saying Mashmo Morid HaGeshem. Interestingly enough, the question is, why do we do it at Musaf altogether? Why do we do it at Musaf altogether? Well, I mean, if the first day of Pesach, should we start already at Ma'ariv? Same thing on Shmirat Tzeres. Why do we start Mashmo Morid HaGeshem at Musaf? We start already at Ma'ariv before. So the Chazal say, yeah, because same problem back then as we have nowadays. Not everybody comes to shul at night. Even by Shacharis, not everybody's in shul on time. By most of everybody's there. Okay, but now none of us are going to shul. So I actually called Rosh Hashanah and I said, maybe we should start at Ma'ariv. But he thought not. He thought that, in effect, the announcement that we'll make in advance, that everybody's going to start, so everyone should start saying Morid HaTal, those say Morid HaTal, or stop saying Moshe Morid HaGeshem with Musaf, on the first day of Pesach. Just to clarify, because a number of people asked me about this as well, there was a letter that went around, which was went viral, I guess, was what the word, almost viral in our circles anyway. I guess viral is a bad term to use right now. But in any event, some very prominent Sephardi poskim in Eretz Yisrael about having a Seder with family via Zoom. Let's just clarify, it was not intended to be, and they clarified it afterwards, this was not intended to be under ordinary circumstances. the issue of electricity on Yom Tov is a major subject. We know that on Yom Tov there are leniencies. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to extend an already existing fire. We can't strike a fire, can't strike a flame, create a new flame on Yom Tov, just like on Shabbos, but you can extend an already existing flame. So that was a question with regards to electricity. If you leave it on from before, can you adjust, and or maybe you can even turn it on? There are all kinds of the accepted practice around here. Certainly, is that we don't use electricity on Yom Tov, and therefore, even you know, to leave the Zoom on, the problem with Zoom or whatever else is even a bigger problem because you know when you talk or when you motion, so it may be a form of kosev on a drabana level because you're creating images. There are all kinds of problems. The suggestion was, or is, for somebody, I have a situation where somebody's alone. Unfortunately for this Pesach, and you know, there's concern about the person's health, or if you know somebody is you know suffering from some kind of depression, or just you know is feeling really almost bikuach nefesh to leave the person alone, says an eitzah to set up some kind of electronic system to remain in contact with the person. That's what it's for. But just to if we're all well, just because I want to hear. And believe me, I want to hear my grandchildren say Manish Tana as much as anybody else. But it's not going to be possible during the course of the Seder. And that's not enough of a reason to apply this kula in terms of electricity. And that it was accepted that it was not to be done. However, I would like to make a suggestion for those who are interested, just before we wrap up. Again, I think we've covered more or less the major issues that are unique to this year. Other issues, again, especially about kashering, I advise you to take advantage of the OU booklet or go on their website. See, they have a very clear presentation on how to kasher or the RCBC videos, and you can get information there. You can speak to me about it privately. But one thing I want to mention that I mentioned to my own children, it requires some advanced preparation, some advanced thought. Again, it's especially if you have children or grandchildren who are not with you for Yom Tov, and we're not going to be able to connect with them in the Seder. It requires some advanced preparation. That is to do the following. Whatever time, I didn't look at the exact Zman, but let's assume that the Zman is 7:20 or something. I have to look at the exact time. We'll send it out, of course, with our shul mailings. Be prepared for your Seder. And I mean by prepared, I mean the table should be set, everyone should be showered and changed and wearing their big day yontif, whatever, let's say by 6 o'clock, an hour plus before. Okay, and daven mincha earlier in the day. As a matter of fact, in the Beis HaMikdash, that's when I daven mincha, the carbon tamid shel ben arbayim, upon which our mincha is based, was done very early in the afternoon, because that had to be before the carbon Pesach. So that's dafka when the tamid shel ben arbayim was brought. So daven mincha earlier in the day. Okay, we're not getting together in shul, so daven mincha earlier in the day. Those who have the minig to say the psukim in the carbon Pesach, as I do that early in the day. But 6 o'clock or whatever time works for you. Get your family together on Zoom, set it up in advance, and have everybody at the table set, wearing Big Day Shabbos, Big Day Yom Tov, and let the children say the Manish Tana, okay, sing some of the songs. You have not a real Seder, you're not going to eat matzah mar, you're not going to drink the abrikosin, so we're not really going to do it, okay, but maybe the kids will eat something, because they're going to eat anyway, and then they're going to bed. That's up to the parents to make a decision, but it's an opportunity to connect with your family, to hear the little children who have been practicing Manish Tana say the Manish Tana, to let some of the older grandchildren or children, whatever it is, say a Dvar Torah. You can say a Dvar Torah. You go through some of the highlights of the Seder, you know, to sing Manish Tana, to sing Eisech Ravodim Hayinu, and Behish Hamda, and maybe B'tzeis Yom Mitzrayim, whatever, your family, and give them an opportunity. It'll be sad in a way, yes, I agree. On the other hand, it's a way of sharing the Seder. And it should be pointed out, Erev Pesach is unlike any other Erev Yom Tov. Erev Yom Kippur has a certain special status too, but for a different reason. Erev Pesach is unlike any other Erev Yom Tov. Erev Pesach is already really Yom Tov. In fact, we call the holiday Pesach, but most of the time in the Tanakh, when it speaks about the day of Pesach, it's talking about the day of what we call Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, Wednesday of next week. The holiday is called Chag HaMatzos. In the Kiddush and in the Davening, we say it's Yom Chag HaMatzos. It's not Pesach. Pesach Hashem is referring to the day of the Korban Pesach. Erev Pesach in the afternoon already is Yom Tov in many ways. That's when the Korban Pesach was brought. The Levium sang, the Gemara tells us, that sang Hallel during the Shechitas HaPesach. When the Korban Pesach was brought, they sang Hallel. So it seems to me that it's an appropriate time. It is an appropriate time. It's not Yom Tov, but it's not Stam right before. It's not like Erev Shabbos or Erev Sukkah, something like that, with just preparation. It already has a status. You know, as a matter of fact, the halacha, again, I'm going to digress. The halacha, that's why Rachmana Litzlan, Ovel, ends his Avelus on Erev Pesach at Chatzos. It's a mistake. People make a mistake. They think that's true of every Erev Shabbos. And it's not correct. Erev Shabbos, somebody sitting in Shiva Rachmana Litzlan on Erev Shabbos. I have just this past week with somebody. You get up, you know, right before Shabbos with enough time to get ready for Shabbos. There's no, I'm told that, I remember hearing that Rabbi Breuer Zichron Levracha would make a point, or Rabbi Schwab, one of the Breuers Danim, would always go to pay a Shiva visit on Friday afternoon because he wanted to make sure that people were still sitting Shiva. Right, so that's the din. It's just confusion came because of Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, Taka Redi Yontif. So maybe it behooves us, those who are interested. I think it can be a very nice thing. It requires, you know, some advanced planning and being ready ahead of the game. You know, and many of us, and certainly I'm in that category, you know, the last minute people. The Gemara tells us that there were three different groups. There were three katim. There were three different groups. They would come to an Erev Pesach to bring the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim. They would let as many people as they can. They would shut the doors, you know, and then the next group would be shut out because there's no more room in the Beis HaMikdash. So when that group was done, they opened the door. The second group would come in. And then finally, they packed everybody in and closed the doors. And then they'd let the third group in. I have almost no doubt which group I would be in. Okay, so I'm a last-minute person. Not almost no doubt. I have no doubt. Okay, but nonetheless, this plan, I think, could be a very, very nice thing for families. To via Zoom to connect with other family members to say over Dvar Torah with as much time as you need. If it's 6 o'clock, okay. If it's 5:30, whatever time you plan of having some kind of a mini seder, especially again with children and grandchildren who want to hear Dvar Torah and you want to say a Dvar Torah, it requires some planning. But I think, you know, it's a week and a half yet to go. That's something you should think about. I'll just conclude with something I mentioned in a Shabbos Hagadol Drasha quite a number of years ago, and it's really the challenge that we all have. This year, especially if we're not with our family and loved ones for the Seder or in a more limited way. If somebody asked, someone just texted, is it okay, you know, if we get up to Hallel, people sit on the porch and say Hallel. Yeah, that's what used to be done in Yerushalayim. The people had to eat the Korban Pesach actually on the floor, on the ground floor of Yerushalayim, not in an attic, but they would go afterwards upstairs and sing Hallel. Okay, if you can arrange it, but again, it should be, you know, via distance. I don't see anything wrong with it. But what I'm talking about is before Yontem, yeah, sing some of the songs from Hallel. Sing, you know, Adir Hu or Chad Gadya, something that the kids know that they feel that there's some connection for Pesach. I just want to finish with this thought, which I think is the avoda for this year, and I've told it to a lot of people recently, and it's been spread around. It's not my thought. It's in the Aruch HaShulchan Zagore. It's called Leil Shimurim. We know that there was a famous Maisa that the Haggadah records. Maisa, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yeshua, right? All these Rabbanim got together on Pesach night, and they had the Seder together, and where was it? Bnei Brak. They got together in Bnei Brak. And the question is, people can wonder, this was all these great Tanoim who lived at that time. Why Bedafka did they go to Bnei Brak? Okay, you look in the Gemara, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Aflam and Beis, those want to look it up, on top of the Beis, the Gemara discusses where some of the Tanoim lived. Okay, I think Rabbi Eliezer lived in Lud, and Rabbi Shul lived in Pekin, and Rabbi Gamaliel lived in Yavne. That they didn't live in Bnei Brak. You know, lived in Bnei Brak, Rabbi Akiva lived in Bnei Brak. Those who know Bnei Brak, one of the main streets in Bnei Brak to this day is Rehov Rabbi Akiva. It's one of the main streets, you know, the main core streets in Bnei Brak. So Rabbi Akiva lived in Bnei Brak. So it sounds like they all came to visit Rabbi Akiva. And what's interesting is Rabbi Akiva was among the younger. Rabbi Lezer was a Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva's. Rabbi Lezer was your contemporary. They were older than Rabbi Akiva. So isn't it strange they came to, why did they come to Bnei Brak? To be with the Bekiva, the Chora, if they're going to get together anyway, so go to the senior Rosh Hashiva's house. I'd let the Bekiva go to his Rebbe's house, not them come to him. So I saw once in the Haggadah of Reuben Margolius, he suggests that we find a number of times in the Gemara that these same Tanaim used to have to go to Rome. This is the time of the Roman Empire. They have to go plead the Jewish case to the Roman authorities and so on. So one year, that year, Mistama, they were in Rome and they came back, Bnei Brak, those who know, it was right by the coast. Right, it's right near Tel Aviv. It's right by Yafo, right near the port. So they didn't have time to get anywhere. They had a rush back and they went to Bnei Brak. The Aruch HaShulchan says differently. He says, in effect, that we have to bear in mind that this story took place during one of the darkest periods of Jewish history. It was, you know, a couple of decades after the Churban. It was a time of the so-called Hadrianic persecutions, when things were very, very bleak for the Jews. It was the failure of the Bar Kokhba revolt and so on. It was really a very, very dark time. And it was difficult for people, even these great Talmid Chachamim, to think about Cherus and Geula and being a Ben Chorin, you know, where we're suffering as a people, and suffering worse than we're suffering now. Okay, but we're suffering as a people. Who's in the mood? But to a certain extent, we have to ask ourselves, who's in the mood now for Pesach? You know, with all these minhagim and dinim, with the change of the whole shuhar almost applying the dinim to this year. And we're in the mood to have a Seder, and we're not going to be with our family, and we're going to be alone, or just with our spouse. And so that's why they went to Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Akiva was the eternal optimist. Rabbi Akiva was the one, we all know the Gemara in the end of Makkos. Rabbi Akiva was the one who, when he saw the Makom HaMikdash destroyed, and everybody else, all the other Chachamim he was walking with, were weeping and dejected, he was cheerful because he realized if that prophecy of destruction came true, the prophecy of rebuilding is going to come true also. And other examples of Rabbi Akiva's optimism. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that Rabbi Akiva, the Mishnah in the end of Yuma says that Rabbi Akiva, Amar Bekiva, Ashrechem Yisrael, Lifna Miyata Mitar Mitar Esem. You're fortunate, the Jewish people, because Avikam Shema Shemaim, your Heavenly Father, He's the one who's Mitar you. So I've asked, what's the Chiddush of Rabbi Akiva? What's he telling us? It's a Mishnah. The end of Yuma. What's Rabbi Akiva telling us? HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings us Tahara. No kidding. That's not a Chiddush. Said, no, because who was Rabbi Akiva talking to again to the door after the Churban? Imagine the first door after the Churban who didn't have a Yom Kippur with the whole Avoda. What happened? Didn't have a Yom Kippur. It disappeared. So Rabbi Akiva said, no, Ashrechem, we're happy because HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Akiva was the optimist. And it even appears in the Haggadah. Because the bracha with which we conclude this, I think the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't say, I'm embellishing it a little bit on my own, if I may. Rabbi Akiva, you look in the bracha that concludes Magid. The Gemara has a Mishnah in Pesachim, has a Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon is basically the text of the bracha is bracha is basically Gal Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva has a whole text that we follow that Kain Yagienu Lemoadim Olor Gal Macherim Sosim Vinyirecha Smechem Sosim Bavodasecha Vesmechem Vinyirecha. There's a whole text that's in the Haggadah. We follow the text of Rabbi Akiva that we should come to other Moadim and so on and so forth. That was the optimism of Rabbi Akiva. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, that's why the Chacham went to Bnei Brak. Who's going to help us celebrate Pesach properly this year? Rabbi Akiva. Marav Rabosai, we have to this year be the Rabbi Akivas of our families and our no matter who we're with. We have to be the Rabbi Akivas. We have to find the optimism. It's difficult. This is something none of us anticipated. It's unprecedented, really, and certainly in any of our lifetimes. And this, you know, this kind of pandemic and so on. We don't know what to make of it, and the confusion and everything else that's occupying and stressing our minds. Nonetheless, we're in the Chodesh HaGeula, and we have to be the Rabbi Akivas for ourselves and for our families, and find a way to celebrate Pesach the way we should. We'll get ready the way we should. Our preparations, even though we're looking every 2 minutes, we're looking down on our phone, any news, what's going on, all the things that are stressing us out. Yeah, but with all that, we should prepare for Pesach properly and mechazik ourselves and mechazik each other for a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, a safe and happy Pesach. Bez Hashem, I will send out an email regarding some form of Shabbos Hagolah Drasha next week. In the meantime, I wish everybody success in your preparations. And again, anyone can feel free to contact me personally with any individual shahs that I may not have covered this evening. Wish everybody a good evening. Thank you for joining us.